broadcasting simultaneously from H-Town and the Motor City. Welcome to another episode of the aptly named podcast about no topic and extreme specificity. I'm Josh, along with my co-host and resident boffin, Dan. Say hi to the folks, Dan.
Hi, folks.
Now, Dan, it's been a little while since we've been on the podcast, and from what I can tell, you have been busy with lots of nerd stuff. You care to tell us more about that?
Yes, I've been doing lots of hot nerd stuff. Mostly in the computer / networking space. And I don't mean networking with people. I mean just the opposite. I mean internet networking. So I've built essentially two computers. And by built, I mean just assemble some parts and install an operating system. Which can be more complicated than it seems, or it can be really easy. But we'll get more into that right now. So we'll start off with the Ethernet router that I built. So Josh, when you hear router, what do you typically think of?
I think of the first thing that comes to mind is the goofy passwords they come with, like Funky Piano 24 or something like that. But, you know, Belkin comes to mind, and, you know, just cheap little routers that people, for whatever reason, think it's okay to buy at Meijer.
Yeah. And they typically have actually three components inside that box. There's a router / firewall that I'm kind of lumping together. There's an Ethernet switch. And then there's usually a wireless access point in there, too. So I've talked briefly about this when I had my previous episode with Zach talking about networking stuff. And essentially what I did is take the router / firewall component and build that into a dedicated computer. So the computer I used is called a HP T730, which is actually what's called a thin client. So it's like if you walk into, you know, a local library computer lab or like a university computer lab, they will sometimes have like little miniature PCs with a monitor and a keyboard and mouse. And they might be running like a virtual instance of Windows and not actually have all the applications installed on those machines. So that's what this is. It's a little miniature PC. It's like a 9-inch by 9-inch square and like 3 inches thick. And I installed a 1 gigabit Ethernet PCI Express card into it that basically allows me to connect more Ethernet devices to it. And then I installed a free software called PFSense, which is pretty popular in the kind of enterprise or business networking scene, which, I mean, on the internet, there's a scene for everything. But essentially, it's based on FreeBSD, which I believe is something similar to Unix or based on Unix. And so I wrote a ISO image to a USB drive. I plugged it into my small form factor PC and booted it up. It took me probably a half dozen boots to get things figured out. First, it didn't like the USB 3 storage device I was using. So I ended up like rewriting the image onto a USB 2 flash drive and then like trying a different USB port. Anyway, it was a little bit finicky, but I finally got it installed. And it works. I mean, I came from a Ubiquiti Edge Router unit, which again is in the kind of small business home office kind of scene. But the reason I wanted to build a more powerful router PC is so I could do some more hardware intensive things with it. So specifically things like having a DNS resolver on there, which looks up domain names and finds their IP addresses, packet inspections to basically monitor all the packets flowing through on a certain network and look for anything that looks suspicious. And then I can review that and, you know, figure out if there's something bad going on. Also, traffic queues. So there are algorithms that kind of prioritize certain packets and kind of limit your traffic so that you get less latency for time-sensitive packets. So things like voice over IP, which we're doing right now, or for gaming, that becomes really, really important so that you don't lose those time-sensitive packets and they get bumped to the front of the queue. So overall, I've actually been using a fair amount of the resources in this dedicated PC. When I typically open it up and look at it, it's using about 1 gigabyte of RAM, which for a dedicated, you know, relatively low power router is quite a bit. And then it usually uses like 25% of the CPU or something like that. So it's definitely something that I'm glad I have a more powerful machine for. So there's lots of content out there on PFSense, but essentially it's very modular. It allows you to do lots of things and customize everything. You can download like add-on packages, which I did for like the packet inspection and the DNS resolution. So it has a built-in DNS blocker, so it blocks ads on my network. It's a really great solution as long as you have the time to put into learning about it and implementing it into your network. So that was one project, which, Josh, we've kind of talked about you or me coming to your place and installing a more robust network at your place. But I'm not sure I would need to go this robust for that kind
of
thing.
I don't think so. I think you have more internet security than most medium-sized businesses right now. I don't think that's something we would need. I think in most households, all you would really need is maybe, you know, more than one, you know, Ethernet access point, and maybe I know we've talked about installing a mesh system at my house before.
Yeah, so that's for wireless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I mean, that's pretty much all we do here is wireless stuff. If we could hook our PCs up to Ethernet, we probably would, and we probably can. It's probably not that labor intensive. We just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah. Yeah, so there is lots of content out there on YouTube. I was able to find a YouTube guide or a forum or Reddit thread on pretty much everything I wanted to do. One more thing I do want to do on my PFSense router is setting up like an OpenVPN server on it. So I'm hoping I'll be able to like be out like at an airport and like VPN directly into my router at home and kind of route my traffic through there. But I'm not sure how to implement that yet or if it will really be any benefit at all, because anyway, I'm still working on that. So that's one thing I've built recently and I've been very happy with. So next, I also built another computer, and this was with some existing gaming PC hardware. So I recently replaced my RAM, my motherboard, my CPU, my power supply, in my main gaming machine, my main like everyday computer. And so I had those extra parts. And instead of using that gaming hardware for gaming, because I'm a gamer, I put it into an old case that I had and set up a all-flash SSD NAS, which NAS is an acronym. It's NAS, which stands for Network Attached Storage. So essentially, it's basically a home server for me. And once again, that was kind of roll your own hardware and then use free software that's available to anybody and write a ISO image to a USB and plug it in and boot it up and install it. This install was much easier than with pfSense, but once I got it up and running, there are a total of three solid state drives. So I have one 240 gigabyte solid state drive. That's the boot drive that just holds the operating system. And then I just started out with 2 1 terabyte solid state drives for storage. And there are, you can have as many storage drives as you can fit or want, essentially. But I modeled it as being a mirrored pair. So that means I have 2 physical 1 terabyte drives, but I effectively only have 1 terabyte of storage because each drive has an exact copy of what's on the other. So you kind of cut your actual capacity in half, but it really helps with the security of the information that's on there. So if one drive fails, you still have another one that you can rebuild off of. So in the future, I might add more when I need more storage, but for now, I've just been kind of getting it set up and figuring out how exactly I want to use it. And I've got essentially a auto synchronization program that synchronizes my documents on my main PC over to the NAS, which is really nice. It's kind of like, you know, Google Drive or Microsoft OneDrive, where as soon as you make a change to, you know, this folder, it is always scanning for changes and then instantly also updates somewhere else with the same information. So if I have a failure on my main PC, I can just hop over to my NAS and grab all that data and put it back on a new machine or a new drive or whatever. So it's really helpful.
Here's a question from someone who sort of knows about computers but isn't really that adept. Why did you choose to use SSDs as opposed to M.2 drives? Aren't those supposed to be like the new thing?
Well, for me, the 2.5-inch solid state drives were quite a bit more affordable than the M.2 form factor. And while the M.2, you know, NVMe style of solid state drive is significantly faster, a 2.5-inch solid state drive is already more than capable of reaching the limit of a 1 gigabit Ethernet system, which is what I have.
Okay.
So
really it was just diminishing returns. The M.2, while being superior to the SSD, the rest of your hardware or your system just isn't there to make the superiority worth it for the extra price.
Yeah, essentially my network doesn't have the throughput capability to be able to use that extra speed. So
okay. That makes sense.
And I mean, when we say, I think when you were saying SSD, you were thinking of that 2.5-inch form factor, which, I mean, the M.2 form factor is also an SSD. They're both solid state drives. They're just slightly different interfaces with the motherboard of the computer. So whereas a M.2 NVMe drive can use like up to four lanes of PCI Express link up like directly to the CPU, a 2.5-inch SSD typically uses the SATA interface, which is limited to, I think it's 6 gigabit per second. but that has to go through like your motherboard chipset and then do your CPU and everything else. So it's a slower interface, but still plenty fast. Still way faster than any, you know, spinning hard disk drive. And like I said, they're quite a bit cheaper for the 2.5-inch form factor. But I have successfully set up an OpenVPN server on my NAS, which means I can, you know, be at work or somewhere else and be able to directly tunnel securely to my NAS at home and access files on it, which is really cool. And I actually created a separate folder for like me and my parents to share stuff in, and my parents are, you know, thousands of miles away. That might be exaggerating, but at least 1,000 miles away. And they're able to, you know, upload something to my NAS and I can upload something to it and we can share back and forth all over that VPN for them, and then I can just directly connect to my NAS. So it's really cool. That was another really key benefit I wanted, is being able to access my files anywhere securely and be able to self-host all that stuff. So it's really cool. And again, there's guides on all of these things. There's way more knowledge on the internet than I will ever be able to express in this format. But I didn't tell you what the software was called. The software is called TrueNAS Core. TrueNAS used to be known as FreeNAS. They switched branding like end of last year. So TrueNAS is still kind of a pretty new name, but it's all run by IX Systems, which has, you know, kind of their own business solutions, you know, background. So they have some money behind them to keep up and maintain the software, which is really nice. And the same goes for the pfSense software. That's run by Netgate, which makes their own routers and other solutions. And so they've got the kind of established company backing the software that everybody can use, which is really, really nice.
Right. So it's not just some guy in a shed making some free software.
Yeah. Which, don't get me wrong, there's some great shedware out there.
Shedware. We just coin that term, or is that an already used term?
I don't know. Maybe. But yeah, both of these are getting, you know, regular updates, you know, always improving, but both are really great and are super popular. So you can find anything you need on the internet, whether it's on the, you know, the scum of the earth on Reddit, or if it's on, you know, dedicated forums or on YouTube. But YouTube guides have been really helpful too. And there are some really great YouTube channels out there. So, now that I had all these computers and things and all these, you know, Ethernet connections to hook up, I needed a place to kind of centralize all that. So I put together a network rack, which, when I say rack, that's the standard, I believe it's 17-inch wide with, you know, the set spaced holes on two vertical rails that's designed to hold rack mount equipment. So I got a what's called a 12U rack. So it's like 12 units tall, which each unit actually takes up like 3 screw holes. But anyway, so I put that together, which was really easy. I got this small rack for like $45 on Amazon. It's fantastic. I also got an Ethernet patch panel, which just has 24 little keystone slots for Ethernet connectors to go in and out of, so that you can have your switches and things kind of easily organized, and then all the, you know, clients snaking out wherever they need to go on the back side of the patch panel. Also a rack mount surge protector, which has like 12 outlets on it. The thing is pretty ridiculous. It even has a cover over the power switch so you don't accidentally power down your whole network. And I also already had a UPS, which is an uninterruptible power supply. It's a car battery, essentially, with a charging circuit, and can power your equipment when the wall power goes out, which I have used. It has been very handy a few times. But I also got a nice rack mount Ubiquiti Unify switch. So it has 16 Ethernet ports. 8 of them have power over Ethernet, so I can power other access points. I can power my Raspberry Pi if I want to. I could power some security cameras. All over that one cable that carries the power and the signal. And it's a really nice switch, very easy to set up. It even has a little touch screen on it so you can see how it's doing without having to like sign into the software login. And then I needed a couple of rack shelves to hold all of my non-rack mount stuff, because most of it isn't actually that full 17 inches wide. It's just, you know, a little box that you have to put on a shelf. So I basically went full IT guy mode for a couple weeks, and it's been great. I love every minute of it. So, Josh, what do you think? You think you're going to build a rack someday?
No, that's kind of my dad's thing, you know, and you grow up around it and kind of like, yeah, it's just a thing. You for whatever reason, it just never really interested me. It's something for another episode, but I've been, you know, kind of neck deep in my own hot nerd stuff with web design recently. So that's kind of the other side of your coin there.
Yeah, which with the domain we have now, you can exercise your web design muscles on that bad boy.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
So,
I don't often like to bring my work home with me, even though, please do not mistake, I am not a web designer if my bosses are listening to this.
Yeah, well, and I enjoy, you know, networking and, you know, audio and computers and all that stuff. And I don't think I would ever want to do it for a real career. It's just a hobby for me. I think it would get old really fast if I was doing it for a career. So I enjoy just kind of separating those two divisions of my life. But for me, it's just been discovering all these things that anybody can do with the right software and hardware, which, of course, that's the whole thing, right? So you have to invest in the hardware, you have to know how to use the software, and then you can get to some pretty, really cool results.
Yeah.
So, true. I mean, we can set up a, you know, a group file share for all of our friends and, you know, be able to VPN into my NAS and move stuff back and forth if we want to. We can share
bring
stuff
it all
on our
come
website.
Crashing down.
Yeah. you won't be able to upload your whole porn collection, Josh, but I might break the capacity a little bit.
Jeez, Dan. Oh, man. No, as someone who used to allow their friends to remote in and print things off of their printer in college, that may not be a function that you want.
Nah, it's okay. I think the VPN connection is probably slow enough anyway that you'll have to kind of pick and choose what you would want to upload to my server, but I think it'd be cool to, you know, at least see how it works. You know, I've got, you know, not that old gaming hardware in my NAS for gamers. And I mean, it should be plenty powerful to handle some load. I mean, I pretty much never stress that machine doing just, you know, file transfers back and forth. It's doesn't even care. So I don't think it would be too much of an issue.
So is this something that's just on and running all the time?
It is. That's another consideration that you have to, you know, make before doing this kind of thing. But, you know, I have, you know, several watts of equipment that is on all the time. I've got, you know, a NAS computer. I've got a router computer. I've got switches and access points.
Yeah, what's that doing to your electric bill over there?
Well, in Texas, it doesn't matter because you can't get electricity. But anyway.
shouldn't have laughed at that too soon.
Yeah. So time will tell. I haven't been running it all that long yet. But, I mean, I recently switched my my electricity middleman. So that I basically cut my bill in half. So at this point, I'm just like,
oh yeah, that's right. You have like actual choice for your electricity in Texas, don't you?
Yeah. So CenterPoint.
Yeah, we don't have that here in Michigan. You just get who you get.
Well, yeah, that's the better way to do it because all the power is distributed by CenterPoint, and then they just sell that to, you know, some, you know, faceless website that buys the electricity and then sells it to the consumer with, you know, essentially 100% markup. So it's just kind of like, well, you find whoever charges the least and has the nicest website, essentially. So it's pretty dumb, but I mean, I use so little electricity for everything else in my apartment. Pretty much it's just, you know, the air conditioner because it's so hot most of the time. But also in Texas, they don't insulate anything because I guess nobody thought to, you know, insulate out the heat. But anyway, I'm a little bit jaded, if you couldn't tell. But yeah, we'll see. I have a kilowatt that plugs into the wall, and you can plug your device into it. I just haven't tried it yet. I mean, my router PC essentially runs off of a laptop charger. It's a really low power machine. It's like, you know, 10 to 15 watts or something like that. And then my NAS computer is essentially at idle all the time, so it's not really using that much power. And I haven't really noticed much heat output, once again, because it's not using really any resources. It's not putting much power through it. But we'll see how it goes. I'm just really happy that it's not too loud, because all this junk is in the corner of my bedroom now, and it's just kind of a gentle whir from all the fans and things. So
you need like I have on my PC, the touchscreen fan controller.
No.
With a really jacked up extra hole that we cut with a utility knife and a Dremel.
Good times. First PC build right there.
Yep.
That was also the build where we had to straighten like a third of the CPU pins.
Yeah, Zach just took like a mechanical pencil and was just sitting there for like an hour and a half.
Great times.
I mean, I probably could have just claimed that the pins came bent and gotten a new one. But
well, I mean, weren't they bent in the package?
I don't think so. I think it was the way we somehow goofed up the install.
How did you mess it up that bad?
I don't know. And then Zach won't like me bringing this up, but then he forgot to put the thermal paste on, so my PC would run for like 5 minutes and then shut itself down because it was, the processor was overheating.
What a rookie mistake. We were so young.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the second PC build was with you over video chat.
And you just getting super pissed.
Yeah, I probably won't do that again on my own. Although now I kind of know how to do it. It's plugging stuff in.
It's so much easier after you've done it once. Like I've pretty much rebuilt my personal PC like 3 times now, and it just gets easier every time.
I think the hardest part was figuring out what direction to orientate the CPU cooler.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we struggled with the fan direction a little bit too.
Cuz I've got that, I went from just like a normal like regular size one to now I have just like this big honking one that I really don't think I need.
Yeah. I recently got the Ryzen 7 5700X, the latest and greatest Ryzen CPU, which unfortunately doesn't come with a cooler anymore for the Ryzen 7.
Oh, it doesn't
7.
Come with those super cool Wraith coolers?
It does not. So I ended up going with a Noctua with the classic poop brown fan on it. But it does the job quite well.
I've got the Arctic Freezer 13. It looks like a big V-twin engine. It's got a nice white fan on it, but you can't see the fan because it's facing away.
Yep.
Still not entirely sure we have it in the right direction, but...
If it works, it works.
Hasn't melted yet, so...
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm at the point where both of my parents use custom-built PCs. I'm on like my third custom PC build. I built, these other two machines. Like I have no reason to buy a computer from any computer builder unless I really, really need a graphics card right now. But that's beside the point.
Or unless, would you build your own laptop?
I'm not sure I could.
Right, so unless you decided for whatever reason you wanted a laptop.
Yeah, which honestly, I kind of want a MacBook. If I were to get a personal laptop.
No, we're ending this right now. This is over. We're done.
Well,
none of that. We'll have none of that.
Okay, well... I guess we're at a pretty good point to end anyway.
Dan, I'm going to need you to take that out in the edit. We're not having any of that on this podcast.
Oh, we're leaving it in now.
No.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll be back again.
Terrible disappointment. It's time to end.
We'll be back eventually sometime, maybe.
Possibly. If Dan doesn't piss me off again.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.